Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday, the 13th of March. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host tonight, Ruby Susan. Tonight on the show, we hear from Joel Wilson, a trans man who spoke out last month in a Fairfax News article about his experience transitioning as part of the Australian Defence Force back in 2013. Joel shares his experiences in and out of the force and shares how he has used that experience to be a positive force for change and support the trans men of Canberra. We also hear from a spokesperson at the Australian Defence Force in reference to inclusivity for not only the trans community but all LGBTIQ plus individuals serving or looking to serve. Plus, after a whirlwind speaking tour around Australia, we speak to Bruce Richman, the founder of the global Undetectable Untransmittable campaign U Equals U, about why we need a campaign like this not only in Australia but all around the world, and we discover how it is changing all our attitudes towards people living with HIV.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
At the beginning of February, Fairfax reported that two former Australian Defence Force Academy cadets claimed discrimination over their transgender status. Joel Wilson was one of those cadets. Despite there being policies in place to prevent bullying and abuse of transgender candidates, that was not Joel's experience as he transitioned. Dina Curie speaks to Joel about what occurred, as well as the Australian Defence Force, to find out what policies and procedures are in place to protect members of the trans community who are serving our country in the Defence Force.
It was a very scary prospect, I can tell you that much. So imagine yourself, you've just arrived at the Australian Defence Force Academy. A lot of the people that you're living with at first thought that you're a boy because you were such a butch woman. I was someone who was considered quite masculine in my interests and the way that I went about the world, but was still being put in that female box. You know, once I started progressing through the academy, you start having formal functions where women are expected to wear dresses and men are expected to wear suits. And they're kind of... There wasn't really much of a space for somewhere in the middle. And I found myself extremely uncomfortable sitting in that middle ground, which for some people, as we know within our community, we have people who are non-binary and exist on different points of that gender spectrum. But for me, existing in that middle ground just did not feel comfortable. I found because there was such a polar difference between men and women at ADFA I wasn't allowed to fit in the male category, but I didn't fit with the women. So that was kind of when I started to go, hang on, I don't fit this female box, and what am I going to do about it?
Former Defence Force Academy cadet Joel Wilson was one of the individuals who alleged he was discriminated against while transitioning gender in a Fairfax News article at the start of February. Claiming that without proper policies in place and follow-up to prevent abuse and bullying in transgender officers, he was forced out of the Defence Force after just 19 months.
Joining the Defence Force for me was a number of things. So I'd finished school in Adelaide and I'd begun my first year at university studying mathematics. And I guess for me, joining the Defence Force was kind of, it was the allure of the challenge and the romanticised image of defence that is that kind of physical activity combined with a job. It was really a number of things. The fact that I could join defence and I could study engineering or, you know, I could study within the STEM fields whilst also being able to do all the leadership and the physical stuff that I really enjoy doing.
It wasn't until Joel was a part of the Defence Force that he realised he was trans back in 2013.
When I joined Defence, I was a very, very butch lesbian at the time. And I guess in that regard, I was still performing gender and bending gender when I joined. However, the notion of kind of transitioning only became something that I wanted to do once I joined. Bearing in mind, I was 19 at the time. It was my first really professional job, finding myself in a really professional environment. Unsure whether or not I was going to be kicked out because I was trans. So, you know, I was really ready to kind of put it, I was expecting the worst. And I first confided in a chaplain and said, look, I think I might be transgender. Fortunately, this chaplain was really lovely and helped me kind of find some people who I needed in order to get the process rolling. I gradually kind of gained courage, and I approached my chain of command, so the officer that was kind of in charge of me, and I approached him with the guide, Defence Forces guide for transitioning in defence, and said, look, I am transgender, I am wanting to transition. Here is the guide, here are the resources. Here is Agenda, AGA in Canberra, which is the organisation that advocates for intersex and transgender people in the ACT. Here's some resources to help me with transition. And that all seemingly went quite well, but it was once I then started coming out to, you know, more than just my chain of command, and started coming out to my peers, that things really turned for the worse. And I mean, little did I know at the time that actually it was around about the time that I, not too long after I'd come out to my chain of command, that actually I'd begun being investigated for being fraudulent, because someone under the whistleblower scheme had placed a claim that I was defrauding the Commonwealth of money. Which was absurd. I was absolutely petrified at the prospect of losing my job and everything that was entailed.
It's something Joel can laugh about now, being targeted as a person who was using being part of the Defence Force as a way to medically transition rather than to serve. But that wasn't the case at the time.
To me, the idea is absurd that one would join Defence and attempt to join Defence purely to have transition funded. I mean, the social ramifications, the pushback, the discrimination that I faced whilst in defence that had years of effect afterwards on my well-being, and in actual fact, they didn't pay for anything. I ended up leaving and saying, you know what, I'll fund things myself and have a much nicer time not being subject to discrimination and bullying.
While the Defence Force won't comment on individual cases, a defence spokesperson did tell the informer that they have a range of policies and practices in place that represent a zero-tolerance approach to bullying, homophobia and transphobia. This is because all defence personnel, including those with diagnosed health conditions such as gender dysphoria, deserve to be supported and treated with respect. Across the country and around the globe, they said, these members have served with distinction and Defence is exceptionally proud of the contributions they've made. They cited that Defence's position of including transgender people in the Australian Defence Force has not changed, nor is it under review. The future success of Defence and ultimately our nation's security is inextricably linked to our capacity to attract and retain the best possible talent regardless of gender, race, religion, disability or sexual orientation. It's about building our capacity and providing a safe and inclusive workspace.
The idea that someone would join purely for financial reasons, to be honest, it would have been easier for me to go get a hospitality job for an entire year and save up and fund my transition off my own back. It certainly would have had far less effects on my well-being and my mental health.
Defence is a team-based organisation and they firmly believe a diverse team is a more capable team. The spokesperson noted, as the Vice Chief of Defence Force said at Senate Estimates on the 25th of October 2017, we're focused on fighting and winning, but we can only fight and win as a team. We can only do that, like any team, if we respect each other and we respect each other's capabilities and skills. They continued that the demographics of Australia have changed, therefore we as an organisation must change to reflect not only the community we protect, but the community we're a part of.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We now continue our conversation with Joel Wilson about What happened after he spoke out last month in a Fairfax News article about his experience transitioning as part of the Australian Defence Force back in 2013. Dina Curie continues reading a statement from the Australian Defence Force.
Defence has implemented a range of strategies to create a safe and inclusive workforce, one where people feel supported at work. These initiatives include benchmarking against other organisations through participation in the Australian Workplace Equality Index, Australia's definitive benchmark on LGBTI workplace inclusion practices and initiatives. In 2015, 16 and 17, Defence was recognised as a top public sector organisation for supporting LGBTI people. Also, establishing the Defence Pride Employee Network, which provides support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex people and allies of Defence. We did reach out to them, but they were unable to us by tonight's show. Being a member of Pride and Diversity, a not-for-profit organisation founded in 2009, designed to assist Australian employees in LGBTI workplace inclusion practices. They continue that they're committed to an ongoing cultural change program and make no apologies for taking steps to attract and retain the best possible talent from across the community, while also ensuring the Australian Defence Force is a representative of the nation it serves. Defence will continue to implement appropriate policies to maintain a motivated, engaged, talented and diverse workforce. This is critical to delivering on our obligations to the Australian community.
In terms of the policies surrounding gender diverse people in defence, I was actually perfectly within my right to transition. And in terms of defence's policies surrounding procedures being covered, is if it's a Medicare number, you know, if it's an itemised, then it is covered by defence. Just as, so chest surgery, for example, is covered by Medicare, there have been many people who have had chest surgery, or, you know, there are men who have, you know, who have excess breast tissue who will have it removed. There's women who will have breast reductions. You know, so there are lots of people who are having very similar surgeries, and there are a number of transgender people who have had surgeries prior to me transitioning and post. I wasn't actually stepping out of the boxes and stepping out of the rules for defence. It was that my chain of command, my colleagues weren't actually following those guidelines. So, you know, there's plenty of rules in defence that don't necessarily get followed all of the time, and I was unfortunate to be on the receiving end of that. I would say to anyone who was looking at joining defence and was gender diverse to be very cautious. I do know people who have had a fantastic time. I also know many people who have had terrible times. And following the article, I actually had people, current members of defence, contact me saying, I'm having a really hard time, can I talk to you? So this is not just something that happened in 2013, 2014 at the Australian Defence Force Academy. This is something that is quite wide, you know, it's still happening. And I think defence really needs to make some serious choices as to how they're going to tackle this. Because, frankly, I was not looked after. I did everything I could in my power to say, here's the resources within the ACT, here's the guidelines, but there was no proactive prevention implemented to kind of stop any bullying from my colleagues, to make sure that I was being assisted in the medical side of the house. I'd be very cautious. Some elements of defence can be really supportive and others very much not so.
After leaving defence, Joel went through the process of filing a human rights complaint to the Australian Human Rights Commission, but the responses given to him were that defence had claimed that the instances had not occurred.
It was relayed to me via the phone, via my doctor, that, you know, defence wouldn't pay for chest surgery, just like they wouldn't pay for someone who had gotten themselves obese. You know, they wouldn't pay for gastric banding surgery because it's their fault, you know. And so I was told for a lot of those things that had happened that, oh, well, no, they didn't happen, or that it was my fault that I hadn't gone through, you know, didn't, rather than just saying I'm not coping, I hadn't flagged things at the right, you know, like I was sent off to training when my grandfather passed away, and they said, oh, we'll pay for you to go see your grandfather's funeral, and then that didn't happen, and I was stuck in an environment where I was being bullied and excluded, and I was dealing with my grandfather's death. And the fact that I wasn't coping and didn't flag that was all my fault. But there was nothing there put in place. You know, my chain of command, everyone knew what was happening, but no one thought to check in. No one thought, you know, there was no preventative measures. I mean, their mental health prevention is, I think, pretty poor. And particularly when you've got staff members I think in any workplace, you know, when you've got staff members that have got a lot of things going on, it's really important that you check in on them on a regular basis. So there are a lot of issues, basically, and my mental health at the time was really poor when I filed that complaint, and I said, you know what, it's, you know, I was going to have to go to mediation and with them claiming that nothing had happened. And then subsequently, you know, would have to have had the capacity to take them to court myself, which, of course, as a student, I do not. So after that, I just let things lie, and I thought, you know what, I could keep fighting this and I could keep trying to file complaints or whatnot, or I could just live my life and actually make a positive difference in the world around me. So I decided to become really involved in transgender visibility, speaking on topics like toxic masculinity, tackling gender equity. I run a local trans masculine group in the ACT, and I try and do things that are actually affecting positive change. I tend not to try and focus on the negative things because I don't want that to be the narrative of all trans people. You know, I have, with the exception of my experience with Defence, had a really great experience as a transgender person, and I want to really focus on affecting positive change rather than dwelling on the past.
Joel does this through TransMas Canberra, and we thank him for being an advocate in regards to this, an issue that many people don't understand.
So it's a group aimed at AFAB, so assigned female at birth, people who identify somewhere along the transmasculine spectrum. So that can be non-binary right through to, you know, really binary male identity, but with a trans history. So we're a really, really broad group with a broad range of ages from... you know, we have 14-year-olds through to 50-year-olds. There's no real restrictions. We aim at providing social support and networking. We have informative events. We have relaxed social gatherings. It's just aiming at really creating a community within Canberra of transmasculine people.
That was Dina Curie speaking to Joel Wilson.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
You may have heard that U equals U, but do you know what that means? Undetectable equals untransmittable is a game-changing notion that helps people living with HIV and people at risk of contracting HIV understand that there is zero risk of contracting HIV when someone has an undetectable viral load. Last week, the founder of the U equals U movement, Bruce Richmond, toured Australia as part of the launch for the Institute of Many and Dynamics International's national U equals U campaign. Richmond is one of the world's most influential HIV advocates, and Ian Muchamore spoke to him after his Melbourne event and discussed the importance and reality of U equals U.
Great sex is being able to be yourself, to be able to lose yourself in the moment, and to have absolutely no barriers between you and the person that you're with. U equals U means I'm untransmittable. It feels amazing. It feels like I can love and be loved and live love, experience love without fear.
Bruce, why do we need a U equals U community campaign in 2018?
This is radical information. U equals U is a major challenge to the status quo, and this isn't the kind of information that just sort of gets out to the public. The public health agencies and the AIDS service organizations, they need that kind of a push. Just like in the early days of the epidemic, we needed to educate doctors and the government and the FDA. We need to do that with this messaging as well. It's complex change, radical change, and it's community driven in the United States, and here in Australia we're seeing an exciting movement and around the world.
What are you hearing about the Australian experience in these conversations so far?
On this trip so far, I've been seeing a lot of commitment and passion and really smart strategic direction, you know, especially from the TIM campaign and Dynamics Alliance. That's very exciting, and is now, you know, we're visiting five cities and getting this message out through live events and through the media and through this social marketing gorgeous campaign. So I'm seeing a lot of exciting activism. I'm also hearing that stigma is still a serious problem, especially in the gay community and in marginalized populations. There still isn't the kind of education and outreach that needs to happen to combat that stigma, and even just to educate about basic treatment literacy, like what is undetectable. So I think there really needs to be, like in many parts of the United States and around the world, a more of an emphasis to outreach into communities that are most at risk and most affected.
So from what you're saying is that something needs to change here.
I think something needs to change in the sense that I think what I'm seeing happening and is really exciting is that the communities are organizing. People living with HIV and the people who love people with HIV are organizing to make sure that this message gets out not only to white gay men like myself, but also to people in marginalized communities, indigenous populations, and in throughout Australia. And I think we need to make sure that that energy keeps going and invest in campaigns like the Tim and Dynamics Collaborative, which is really exciting to me, and make sure that these campaigns are all over the country and are replicated and localized for different communities, so that it's accessible and reaches all people living with HIV.
If I might say, that's great at a high level, but at the personal level, what do we need to do? And you spoke about this in your presentation, to get the U equals U message accepted. What are the practical things at a personal level for a listener who is saying, actually, I'm trying to communicate this, or I don't believe this message? What would you say to them getting this message accepted? What do we need to change?
It's really important that people be clear about this message. U equals U is true. There's no question about it. It is endorsed by the greatest minds in science and medicine around the world. The leading organizations and research institutions are confirming that it's true. And so when we talk about it, we have to be clear. There is no risk. It cannot transmit and do not transmit. We have to be clear in our language, because when you talk about the risk from a human being, and that's what we're really talking about here. We're talking about the risk from a human being and the most intimate acts of our lives. We have to be impeccable with our words. And so when you say something like, oh, it reduces the risk, or it's less likely to transmit HIV, that means we're still a bomb. We're a smaller bomb, but we're still a bomb. So we need people to be clear in their messaging and communicate with confidence that we cannot transmit HIV. When we're HIV positive and undetectable and we stay on our medications, there's no risk. There's no risk of the virus shooting up to infectious levels. There's no risk if there's particles of HIV in the semen. There's simply no risk.
Do you think that when some people hear that, or they hear the U equals U message, they still don't accept it, or they don't believe it?
Some people still are having a hard time accepting the U equals U message. They doubt science, and they doubt the greatest minds in science and institutions. Some people still believe there's no global warming. But then other people, it's just an issue of trauma, you know, that we have been living and dying with HIV stigma for 35 years. And so stigma is a part of what we've lived with and experienced. It's hard to let go of that. So we really need to unlearn what we've been learning for 35 years about HIV. And for some people, that takes more time. They're not willing to take that leap right away because science is proving it's true. It takes a little bit longer for the emotions to catch up.
Another response, which I've certainly heard, is, well, they say that they're undetectable, but is that really true? And we know that there are some people who are not honest, and they might be HIV positive and they might be HIV negative, and that's the way of the world. So what do you say to those people who say, well, I'm not sure that I can believe them?
If someone is having trouble trusting another person, that's an issue of trust in relationships. It's not an issue of whether someone who's undetectable is untransmittable or not. If you're in a bathhouse and it's a dark room and you don't know who is about to fuck you, you might not, and they say they're undetectable, you might not trust them. So, but if you're dating someone, you know, if you trust someone and they say they're undetectable, you know, then I don't see why there would be any problem. People living with HIV aren't inherently dishonest, you know, and people who are taking PrEP aren't inherently dishonest, but people might lie about PrEP. People might lie about being HIV positive. It's just an issue of relationships. It doesn't have any bearing on whether U equals U is really true.
Whatever barriers did exist between me and love are no longer there. And I suppose it means the same thing for everyone. U equals U means we can love without fear.
That was Ian Muchamore speaking to Bruce Richmond, the founder of Undetectable Equals Untransmittable. With audio from part of the Company of Many and Dynamix International's U Equals U campaign.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy. I'm Ruby Susan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.